creating sounds that terrify. Sometimes all it takes are a few notes to make our pulse pound and the hair on the back of our neck stand up. That, of course, is from the movie Jaws, a music theme that still strikes fear in beachgoers. A few years after Jaws, a little movie named Halloween came out. Still to this day, just a few notes of this theme send shivers and makes one wonder if Michael Myers is waiting behind a tree, in the closet, or under a sheet to get you. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today we're going to learn about the art of creating scary, spooky sound. Which sounds have you looking over your shoulder or under your bed? Maine Calling gets scary. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Tis the season for trick-or-treating, ghoulish get-ups, and ghost stories. Today, we're going to hear from three people very familiar with creating spine-tingling, anxiety-inducing scenes. With me in our studio, Frederick Greenhalgh. She's a writer and producer at Final Rune Productions and Radio Drama Revival. He is also the creator of The Cleansed, a serialized apocalyptic epic podcast. Rory O'Shea is the award-winning sound designer of The Starling Project and owner of Smash Sound Studios. And Bill Dufries is producer of audio comics and the director of Titanium Rain and the Perhaponauts and Horoscopes. Gentlemen, thank you all for being here today. And Fred, welcome back.
Yeah, that's very fun and spooky outside today, how warm it is actually.
And spooky overnight, that's right. But of course, we want to hear from you. We want to hear what sounds scare you. Is there a particular noise, maybe the hoo of an owl or the creak of an old door that makes you wonder who's there? Or is there a movie or audiobook scene that you just can't forget? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And I know it's not very creepy, but Bill, we have to say anybody who has had a small child in the last 15 years knows your voice. And why is that?
I'm the original voice of Bob the Builder. So can we scare you?
Oh,
yes, we can.
I like it. I was going to sing on the air, but I'll let you do it for me. But back to the idea. And Fred, I'm going to start with you. Why does sound get under our skin? Why, is it the theme of the horror movie or the sound of the ticking clock that sort of gets to us?
Well, I think a lot has to do with what you can't see. And there's this really great line by Stephen King in one of his books sort of on horror, and he even talks about radio drama, about how you're the hero and you're creeping up the stairs and you see the door at the top of the stairs and there's a monster behind it and you're like, all right, we're opening the door. Oh, it's only 7 feet tall. I thought it was a 12-foot tall monster. And then he remarks about how in radio drama, they never, ever showed off the monster. You never saw that there actually was like a little hook in the back of the monster costume or, you know, rubber in the monster. And I think that's the sort of the magic of sound, is that it hits us on this very primal way. And your imagination can fill in so much more details that when your eyes, they see something literal and visual, you can sort of start to rationalize and break it down and to make it make sense. And the whole nature of horror is that unknown. And I think there's also a physical element where it actually, bass actually physically affects you down to your spine, literally tingling your spine. So it's a combination of just the nature of how our senses work, visual versus oral.
Okay. And Rory, all three of you in the room here have worked on the new production, Lock and Key, which is available as a free download only until November 4th. And we've put a link on our MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page if you'd like to listen to it. Rory, I want to ask you, and anybody else can chime in here, if you take a book, do you, as an audio engineer, when you're reading a book, are you hearing the sounds that you want to put on that page?
Constantly. It's as I'm reading it, I have the whole soundscape in my head, And it's just – I have it all worked out, and it's just a matter of getting those sounds and then putting them into my program and then layering them and getting the spookiest, scariest sounds I can possibly get.
So are you sort of always, as you walk through your life, hyper-aware of sound in a way that maybe the rest of us aren't?
I am. I hear stuff and I'm like, oh, that make a real cool sound. Or I hear a clock ticking and I know I can take that and manipulate it and just scare people. Yeah. So it's
Yeah. Well, and I think as those of us on the recording end do the similar things, and maybe Bill can talk about directing, any sort of audio fiction. But you know that the listener is going to be limited to this technology, which is either headphones or earbuds in their ears or speakers. And so you have those limitations, but you're trying to put as much into the production as possible using the technology available. So having so we record on location. We take equipment where you can reproduce a faithful stereo sound. So you can have actors actually moving around from left to right or crouching or running in fear and screaming as the scene dictates. And all of those sorts of decisions that you as the director and producer of the piece are able to record, that does transmit into the final product when you hear it and making it seem realistic.
Bill, when you're directing or acting in a scary audiobook or a scary television show or a scary movie, do you think about things different? Are you pausing because you know that sound or that noise is going to swell up at that point? Or
I think it's organic because as an actor director, it's just feeling it through and reacting naturally to a particular circumstance or situation. Touching back on what Rory was talking about, when I actually read a book to myself, I'm seeing it filmically in my mind's eye. And when directing, an audio theater piece, I'm actually hearing all the voices in my head and, trying to get my actors to just basically mimic me. Because I want to play all the parts anyway.
It helps me schizophrenic.
Yes. Yeah. going back to what Fred was talking about too, doing all of this on location is incredibly liberating. The actors are not just standing in front of a microphone in a studio environment and with their own individual headsets and being separate from the actual scene or whatever, but being on location, they're actually physically there and they're actually physically able to interact with one another. So we have, people grappling one another, hugging and kissing, flying, running away, all of which lends that cinema verite to the soundscape and really just makes it come alive in a way that you don't normally hear.
And I think it's worth mentioning specifically with something like Lock and Key. What made it a very unique audio product is that it was a graphic novel and a very fine graphic novel by Joe Hill, and highly recommend both versions, both the Audible version and also the graphic novel. But that it did pose some unique challenges, and a lot of adventure pushed us to be the best artists we could be. When it was really magical for me is the same thing. You're looking at something that's visual, but you're hearing it in your head. And if you have that sort of particular weird thing about you, I think that what makes you a good audio dramatist is when
his
you see
particular weird thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you see that, there's this all the beautiful artwork of these like living shadows that come to attack the characters at one point. And then in my head as a reader, I'm hearing whoosh, wah, wah, and you're there. And several people sort of say, "Well, how does the graphic novel work in audio?" And I think it's just having that sort of audio literacy. And I think, and then when it works, and it sounds like based on the review so far, people it is working and resonating with the audience. It works because we've done a good job at that, and hopefully. That's what's working. But
the thing about a graphic novel too is that we're able to utilize it as a storyboard. So everything's all put out there for us, and interior, exterior, inner thoughts, whatever. So we remained very faithful to the material as rendered by Gabriel Rodriguez. And going back to the idea, the mentioning of the shadows, myself and another artist did the voices for it. And so this sort of thing. Which then Rory takes and manipulates and just takes it to a whole another realm.
I think I'd like to hear that again, Bill.
All right, whatever I can do. do for you, my dear.
That is really scary. I have to tell our audience.
It's got
looking,
my throat, help me.
I'm looking across the table at a very nice looking, regular looking person who's making these noises. That's something. So Rory, I want to ask you, you know, I because I've worked in radio and television, a little bit of experience finding out that sometimes things don't sound like themselves when you report them.
Yes. You know, did that sound like Bill? No.
Well, you know, and just a very simple one is the waves on the ocean. Mm. It's very hard to mimic that, isn't it? And one time I tried to record different bird sounds and trees, and boy, try getting the sound of one of those birds when others are singing. So are there any places where you sort of fake it and you're making
all the time.
So the tell sound, us some secrets.
Like when you look at something and you hear the sound in real life, it will not translate into an audiobook or even a film. Like for instance, what does a shadow sound like? Mm-hmm. So it's something I had to completely create so I could decide what the shadow sounded like. Or like what's a good example of a bone breaking? Like bone breaking. You just layer it with like you get a twig snapping, which is going to sound
or celery.
Yep. So it's you just layer it until you get this nice thick full sound, and the simplest little sound may have 10 different layers just to get that one sound.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, we're going to listen to a couple clips here, and I think that we will start with, this is a very, very, very famous character in a very famous movie, very scary. And we'll see. Okay, I'm trying to talk to the engineer with my fingers. We'll hear this sound without the bed under it first. All right, you may know who that is already, or you may think, oh, that's the sound of a scuba diver. But now we're going to put it in context. Okay. You guys know who that is?
That's me and my lung machine.
Fred, you know who he is?
Yeah, obviously iconic film villain. You know, it's
Darth
funny.
Darth Vader, in case somebody else.
Yeah. To be clear. But think about, if you mentioned Star Wars, what do you think about? It's either that or it's the clang of lightsabers, or it may be John Williams' theme. More than like a picture of a Millennium Falcon in your mind, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to bet. One kind of thing just to riff off that I think is really interesting about Star Wars and how the sound design for Star Wars is made is that a lot of the sounds, and if you're just like, you know, think this is cool, check out Ben Burtt, B-U-R-T-T, on YouTube. And he has videos where he talks about this, where like the sound of the Millennium Falcon is like all this weird stuff from the 70s that made whooshing noises, the stuff that literally doesn't exist anymore today's, you know, digital world.
Yes. There's a pig squeal in there as well.
There's clicking and whooshes and all this stuff, which is interesting because I think it also sort of, it speaks to the era in the same way that, say, people hear Jimi Hendrix's music and there's something about that music that also sums up the era of recording. There's a lot of that in the sound design of some classic movies that would just be different. And maybe Rory can talk about how sound design for film is probably different than that era because of how much digital has affected the actual tools.
You know, just taking a picture with a camera with your iPhone, and you don't have the sound. So we're still trying to, fortunately they do actually have, the sound that's able to replicate it in the iPhone, and that's what we're hoping, that's what we're relying on. But
yeah, I mean, it's back then everything was done on tape to tape and you had to do it in real time, but now it's on Pro Tools and you can do in 5 minutes what used to take 8 hours. And I have 2 terabytes worth of sound effects, which I know makes Bill jealous.
Very jealous.
So I'm just going through, I have these programs, I search for, like when I see, say, the shadow, and I'm like, okay, I want some whooshes for this. So I search whooshes and I throw a whole bunch in there and I can layer them all. And it takes me, it still takes a lot of time for locking.
It takes them a lot of time to find it and then 5 minutes to put it together because it's got 2 terabytes.
Lock and key, for instance, I worked on from October of last year until May. So it was quite the process.
And how long is the audio book?
13 and a half hours.
Okay. Well, that would make sense.
It's like a mini-series for Netflix, but an audio, kind of.
Yeah.
And again, if you're curious what we're talking about, Lock and Key is an audiobook that the 3 people in my room helped put together. It's based on a Joe Hill serial novel, which was very and is very, very popular. Joe Hill is very well-known horror writer on his own, but he's also Stephen King's son. So he is a Mainer, and everybody here is a Mainer. And I'm wondering, is there something about Maine? Is what's in our water here?
I don't know. I do know that maybe it is just that Stephen King casts a long shadow. I just have memories of reading Cujo when I was, you know, 8 or something. So I apparently was, and I remember having absolute sheer terror.
Where are your parents?
Unattended. But I mean, literally looking at the book, and it causes this feeling of deep-seated anxiety. And you either, you don't like that, or you do. And if you do, you end up getting into the horror field yourself. So, I don't know how much, I think a lot of us have followed, who've had that experience. You know, it's just a Maine kind of experience. I don't know what else about Maine that makes it so weird.
The woods.
Yeah.
lots and lots of woods and darkness.
The poltergeists out there.
For me, it was The Shining. That was the one book, that the first book I ever closed upon reaching a particular scene, and that with the woman getting out of the bathtub and whatever room number and approaching the little boy at the door. And I literally just slammed the book shut and didn't go back to it for 3 days.
I would not have gone back at all. Rory, you were trying to jump in.
I was going to say, I'm not from Maine. I'm from Canada and I live in Dubai, but yeah, it's oddly spooky.
Mm-hmm. You live in Dubai.
I do, yes.
Are there a lot of audiobooks there?
No. but I met up with Bill and I've been doing all the work from Dubai and I came out here for a visit. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for finding your way to the MPBN studio. Yeah. We have to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, talk about sounds that scare you, or maybe find out some secrets from the audio producers in this room, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Send us an email at talk@mpbn.net. Send us a Facebook post, or if you like to do that, you can send us a tweet. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Silly's and Silly's with a Twist in Portland's East End. Open at 11 Wednesday through Friday, 9 on the weekends, with vegan and gluten-free options, sillys.com. Casella, committed to safe, efficient disposal of non-recyclable waste for all 16 Maine counties. Casella, giving resources new life. And AARP Maine, educating Mainers about the CARE Act, a new law supporting family caregivers, aarp.org/ME.
The One Day Super Thursday campaigns have worked incredibly well for MPBN, Maine Public Radio, and for listeners too, of course. And the station is doing all it can to make sure it keeps the One Day on-air radio campaigns alive. Hi, this is Mark Vogelsang, president of MPBN. Now, here's what's happening. With very important new member and dollar goals, the station is concerned that some of you will miss the One Day Super Thursday drive coming up on November 5. So all calls and pledges online leading up to that day will also count toward those important goals. That means you don't have to wait till November 5. You can do your part right now. The number is 1-800-866-1475. You can pledge online at mpbn.net. The campaign, of course, is underway now, although a bit quieter and easier to take this way. So let's make sure that the on-air portion, the Super Thursday, remains only on that one day, Super Thursday. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Making Sounds That Scare. With me in our studio, Frederick Greenhall. She is a writer and producer at Final Rune Productions. Rory O'Shea is a sound designer and owner of Smash Sound Studios. Bill Dufries is producer of Audio Comics. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to take another listen to something that everybody in this room, except for myself, worked on.
Just the ebony clock against the wall. There's a man there. Simon Magus.
Welcome, improvisatori. I'm delighted to meet you all again so soon. There was a necessary last-minute adjustment to make to the clock. The midnight chime, critical to so many things.
I hope it's more pleasant than the sound of this pendulum.
When the minute hand makes the circuit of the face and the hour is to be stricken, there will come from the brazen lungs of this clock a sound which is clear and loud and deep.
And that was you, Bill.
No, no, no. That was Michael Howard. Oh, Michael Howard was the Magus, and Tony Riley was in there. Lisa Stathopoulos, Adam Henderson, and Allison Larkin, and Dan Noel.
Is called Mask of the Red Death.
Yep. Okay. Adapted by Michael Wilson from the Edgar Allan Poe short story.
So what is it about the ticking? Why is that, everywhere?
It's, you know what? Sounds like that add tension. Like just sound in general adds tension to the scene, which what makes sound, makes something scary. Like, have you ever watched a horror movie? I know you haven't watched many horror movies, but a horror movie with no sound, it's just like, meh, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing scary about it. But you add the sound to that and you add the tension, then it becomes scary.
And that syncopation, which can echo the heartbeat and get it racing. Okay. And
like that clock ticking, again, that's something I think I had 10 different ticking and different different layers just to get that nice, thick, heavy tick.
So that was not one pendulum.
Oh, no,
you
no,
were timing.
No, no.
Oh, wow. Isn't that interesting? And what Rory's alluding to is I fessed up before the show that I don't like to watch scary movies because I like to sleep at night. I don't like to be up in the middle of the night. And the last really scary movie I saw was Silence of the Lambs. So that did me
good.
Yes,
that's
very,
a good one,
very scary. We don't have sounds from that to play for you today. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Ginny, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Ginny.
How you doing?
Good. What scares you?
And it's good to have you. Oh, what scares me? The shower scene in Psycho.
Mm.
For years, I could not take a shower alone. No lie.
Boy, you smell, don't you? Do you smell?
If I don't have anybody in the house with me, no, just but it was just that, right? And then when she goes to the basement and turns the old lady around in her chair, and I love that guy, Anthony Perkins, that's his name. I love that. That was one of my favorite. And then the little speech that Vincent Price makes in the video that Michael Jackson made.
Yes.
I love Vincent Price. I love that man. Could read the phone book to me. The voice. And like you say, it's the sound.
Yeah. So, can one of the three of you replicate the what makes the shower? Tell us why is the shower scheme so scary?
Yep, exactly.
And
it's just a high pitched sound that kind of grates on your nerves.
Yeah. Alfred Hitchcock always had. I love his movies.
It is the less is more. You know, in today's, if they're going to do Psycho again today, it would be like blood splatter and, gore, and it would be this, but it's all there right in front of you. It's not the, it's not the, your mind is way scarier than anything they can actually show you.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Your favorite movie is The Chainsaw Massacre. Oh. he will watch it today and still get a kick out of it.
I actually did a book with Leatherface, the character that the actor that played that Gunner, whose name
not the actual villain,
not the actual villain.
That would be odd.
Yes. But the actor who portrayed Leatherface in that.
Ginny, thanks so much for calling, Frederick. You were talking about less is more. Is sometimes silence the scariest of all?
Yes. I mean, because it's the absence of sound, and there's certainly. Melody and, dynamics and, again, Rory can talk about, dynamic range is one of these things that they all the real audio engineers are going crazy about how everything's getting smashed to fit on iTunes and all these sorts of things. And it limits sort of your tools. When you have fast paced scenes and slower paced scenes, that's what gives it, some room for the production to breathe. And and sometimes silence is the
there's nothing like one of my favorite things to do is I create all these ambiences and have like derelict buildings and winds and it's kind of subtle and really quiet, and then you get this really loud sound that scares the pants off somebody.
And what do you mean by that smashing to fit on iTunes? What's going on?
Oh, it's just like everything's all just compressed. So like when you have dynamic range, it's like it gets loud, it gets quiet. So you have your really quiet points. So the loud points seem louder and they can scare you more. Whereas the way music is produced these days, it's a wall of sound. Like if you were to look at the waveform on a computer, it just looks like a brick wall.
Yeah.
Whereas where you look at our audiobooks, or even a movie soundtrack. It's nice dynamic range everywhere.
I've heard that that's why television commercials seem louder, is because it's a wall of sound, not because they're actually louder, but you've gone from a program that has silence, even though this is not technically what we're talking about today.
Yeah. But a program which is mixed correctly and has nice dynamic range, and all the commercial clients on radio as well want their commercial to be the loudest. And so they hard limit them. So even though it's within spec of not being outside of the loudness spec, it just seems louder because it's so hard limited.
Yeah, they pump it up to 11.
These go to 11.
Yeah.
If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We've got Rob from Skowhegan. Rob, what scares you?
What scares me? The Exorcist. When I was a kid. Yeah, that freaked me out.
Damien, why you do this to me, Damien?
Did you have another thought or comment?
I did, yes. I drive a truck for a living, and I listened to We're Alive. It was an audio drama. Loved it. I was in a funk for like a week after I finished it, and I was just wondering if you guys had anything comparable to that show, obviously Lock and Key.
Yeah, definitely check out Lock and Key and anything else Bill and I have done. And Rory's been on a number of our projects now. We're glad to have him along. But Jennifer said in the announcements, I run a podcast called Radio Drama Revival. Has something like 400 hours of audio drama that We're Live is among many features. It is Horror Month, so just do a quick plug. I do all horror this month, but then the theme changes, and I'll be doing non-horror stuff, and then usually it's a launch pad for discovering all sorts of new podcasts, because a lot of the more interesting, Audible is, it's really exciting that someone like Audible is interested in making what we're passionate about are these full cast, multi-voiced, acted out, performed pieces. We love audiobooks too, but this is a different entity. A lot of what's good out there are in the form of podcasts, and without getting the technology, the reality is that a lot of these are long form things. They don't fit into like a radio broadcast slot. So all the good stuff is in podcasts, and I try to use my podcast as a launching pad for whatever new crazy thing you want to go discover.
And in Loving It, We're Alive, as you indicated, check out Fred's The Cleansed, which is how many hours now?
Well, it'll be 15. It'll be 15 hours. We're launching season 3 next week. And that's a post-apocalyptic kind of in the vein of The Stand, but in today's more post-oil peak oil situation.
Yes, which we're approaching.
So, Rob, you drive a truck and listen to these scary audio plays. Does this affect your driving at all?
It makes it more enjoyable.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Cool.
I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks so much
Happy
for
driving.
Calling. Yeah. We're going to go to Steve, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Well, I remember when Jaws first came out and the sound of that music,
Yeah.
We were probably just out of high school. I can't remember what year it was. I think it was the summer when it was first released.
Yeah.
Sure. So we went to Moosehead to go swimming. And Moosehead was like white cap that day. It was only a dock like 35, like a little float 35 feet from the shore. So after a few people, most of us got in, it was a co-ed group, got in the water, and about halfway there, someone started going, dun, dun, dun. And it was sheer panic. I mean, sheer panic to get on that dock. I think a couple of people got out of the water, but I remember this to this day. I'm almost 60. And when that music played, I remember in the theater, like the second time they did it, I mean, people literally just screamed. And I think it's iconic now. Anyway, and you're right, the sound of it. But certainly the shark looked pretty ferocious, too. And it wasn't so much the scene, the sound, and then the bubbling up of the water or the person going under, But anyway, that sound, I think, is iconic.
Yeah, speaking to what Fred was saying earlier, it's the imagination that actually seeing whether you're hearing the sound or seeing the bubbles Imagining what those bubbles might be.
Yeah, and I don't mean to keep sort of like re-quoting Stephen King, but he really does speak quite eloquently about horror and why it makes it, what makes it tick. And there is like some passage in where he sort of says about the two movies that you go to where you hear the audience reacting are horror movies and comedies. And I thought that was that's quite interesting. And sort of like, why would people, why, what makes people excited about horror? You know, clearly you, Jennifer, don't love that experience, but some people, you know, those of us who are twisted, enjoy, it is a very visceral reaction that you feel. And you know, there are many reasons that people go to entertainment and read books. And sometimes it's to, you know, it's to escape, it's to learn, it's to expand your mind. With horror, I think with those of us who are excited about it or what we're trying to enjoy ourselves, we felt this way and we want to try and help our audiences feel this way, just so they remember for 50 years some experience they had because of something we made. It's that just feeling this real, visceral, real thing, and to have a creatively, fictionally created world make a human being have a physical reaction is kind of a cool.
And then the relief to realize that you're not actually in that.
You're not
world.
Actually in it. You can turn it off, and it's not like you're actually fearing for your life.
And I can appreciate that, Fred. I just I wish that it didn't cause me to wake up in the middle of the night. And maybe it's because I take things too literally when I'm watching listening to.
Yeah,
something.
My wife is the same way. Like one time we listen to podcasts when we go to sleep, and I accidentally left one I shouldn't have. And anyways, that was not a good idea to
Maria's
go to sleep.
My wife is the same way.
Isn't that funny?
When Fred talks about Stephen King, he actually there are two references and two books that he actually refers to: Radio Theater, and that's Everything's Eventual, and Danse Macabre, which is where he talks about the giant monster behind the door. But in Everything's Eventual, he talks about actually trying to create his own radio play set in Bangor based on War of the Worlds. Found it he loves radio theater, or so he claims in the book, but he found it really difficult to write for the medium. And that's where, you know, it is a really tricky thing to do for him because, I mean, you don't have the visuals. You have to explain in such a way that's not cumbersome and
Bill, watch out for this bullet. I'm going to shoot at you, Bill.
Yes. Oh, the gun you're holding in your left hand?
Oh, no, it's in my right hand now. Oh, I seem to have dropped it.
Rory, how do you ever get anything done working with these two?
I just let them go. You
know. He lives in Dubai.
He lives in Dubai.
I had to move away.
So we have a Facebook post. Please discuss the use of infrasound in horror soundscapes. I don't know what infrasound is. What is infrasound horror, Rory?
That's a new one for me, too.
Really?
Do you think it's maybe, I mean, I'm just going to make up my own definition for infrasound, but do you think it's
using... what you don't know, make up and act like you do know it?
Yeah. But do you think it's frequencies? Like maybe they're using frequencies below human threshold of hearing to sort of like, you may not hear like a 10 hertz sound, but it might make you... Your gut.
Like you can't see infrared.
And I know do you do that? Do you manipulate us that way?
People feel uncomfortable?
Do you do that in a way that we're not conscious of what we're hearing? But
So much because, especially with audiobooks, you don't want to muddy it up too much. But I am very conscious of all the different frequencies because you want, actually, Bill and I were discussing this last night. When you're layering sounds, if you layer a whole bunch of sounds with low frequencies below 150 hertz, it just becomes mud. Yeah. So you want some low frequencies, mid frequencies, and high frequencies, and that gives you this really full soundscape. And to me, the really low frequencies and the really high frequencies are the horror frequencies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. Think of mixing colors, and you get brown if you mix too many colors. When I did Titanium Rain, this is what we were talking about last night. It takes there's a fighter pilot in a jet fighter, and so it's not just the sound of the jet engine, but there's also the wind outside the canopy racing by. There's the stressed metal as it's starting to vibrate, and all of these various elements that all go into creating and him flicking buttons and switches and things like that are subliminal. They're there, but it would be empty if you didn't have it there. The listener's not necessarily picking up on any of this,
sound when it's right, nobody says anything.
Yes.
I bet.
Yeah. Yes. If the sound's wrong, then that's when
they know.
They get taken out of the story.
Yeah. It just sounds like it's just not very well done. Yeah.
So I've done my job if nobody says anything.
Yeah. He's so good. No one comments.
Yeah. Well, we have to take another short break. If you'd like to join the conversation. conversation, if you want to tell us what scares you or have questions for sound designers, sound engineers, call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Patriot Subaru, providing sales, service, and accessories on new and pre-owned all-wheel drive Subarus on Route 1 in Saco. And the Clean Bedroom, helping create eco-friendly sleep environments, 477 4th Street in Portland and in Kittery at Dan's Crossing. TheCleanBedroom.com.
So we got a letter from Beatrice. Seems she missed the last couple of Super Thursdays since Thursday, for some reason, is her day to visit with relatives, and she doesn't take her radio with her. She was not amused. She missed her opportunity to do her part for her public radio station. And Beatrice, apparently, is not alone, and MPBN Radio doesn't want to leave anyone out. But MPBN Radio also doesn't want to throw away a great thing, our one-day on-air Super Thursday membership campaign. Our next one, by the way, is coming right up November 5th. New members, additional gifts, evergreen sustainer upgrades. Many will help to keep Maine Public Radio and Super Thursday alive. But while we'll only be intruding on your programming that one day, this time no one will be left out, because every call or pledge online leading up to that one day, including right now, will count as well. Beatrice, we've got you covered. Here's the number, 1-800-866-1475. You can also pledge online at mpbn.net. It all counts, including your pledge. Thank you.
And join us this afternoon at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling for World Affairs. Today's speaker, David O'Sullivan, European Union Ambassador. That's World Affairs coming up after Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how to make scary sounds and stories. With me in our studio, three people very familiar with the subject. Frederick Greenhalgh is a writer and producer of audio drama, and some of them are quite scary. Rory O'Shea, a sound designer, and Bill Dufries, a producer and director. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Before we go on, though, we're going to listen to one more piece of sound from one of Frederick Greenhalgh's productions.
Help! Help!
They need to come back. Do they need to harvest your insides?
Fred, what's going on there?
This is talking about dynamic range. We're going from this is a hospital where a man wakes up apparently from a car accident in what he thinks is a hospital, but turns out not to be the kind of facility we would ever like to be found in. And it's a very kind of claustrophobic piece where you're just in this hospital bed tied down to the character, kind of wondering what's happening around you. And that clip is as the scene is starting to develop, that things are not quite as they seem. When another patient tells him that the nurse is going to come get his organs. So that's as we're going, you know, the way we pull it off is by starting it, keeping it very, very quiet and letting things start to unfold. So then when you start crescendoing, it can be the impact. You have a lot of room to scale for the impact. And, you know, music, classical music is a great example of how that is done, of how you start with a, you know, slow build. And then when you bring up to the full on, you know, onslaught of the symphony, it's, you know, you have built something that you can reach instead of starting at like a Metallica album, starting at 11 and staying at 11 until you run out of electricity.
So, Rory, what is the strangest thing that you've ever done to make the sound you want?
Strangest thing. Well, making for the audiobook end of things, I don't actually go in and like twist chicken carcasses up or anything to make sounds, because that's more for a film where you have the—
He twists chicken carcasses on film.
Okay.
Yeah. So
thanks for clarifying, Bill.
So we have the picture and you kind of recreate it to the picture. That's more of a Foley artist. For the audiobooks, I just use everything from a library and I just layer the sounds over and over and over again until I get what I'm looking for.
But then you process as well.
Like Bill's shadow voice, I added reverb and delays to it. It's creepy on its own, but I took it to 11.
Yes.
So Let's say we're giving practical pointers. Maybe somebody in our audience is putting on a haunted house this weekend or just wants to stick a speaker in the window for the kids who are trick-or-treating. What are some quick and easy and sort of creative ways someone could create a scary atmosphere?
I could have recorded outside last night.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, the typical like thunderstorms, winds, howls, cackles, chains.
Yep.
Yeah.
Chains. That's a great idea. Yeah. We're going to go to Gray, where Mark is calling. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. One sound that I find spooky are wolves howling in the night.
Mm-hmm.
And where I live in Gray, I'm surrounded by trees and woods. And every so often, there's a pack of, and I haven't identified what they are yet, but it sounds like coyotes, wolves, or like quite a few of them howling in the night.
Yeah.
And you can hear the young ones crying along behind them, and it just scares me. I wake up and I sometimes have chills. Like,
and it's primal, yeah. Isn't it? Because yeah. You don't think they're going to break into your house and get you, do you?
No, but it still manages to scare me, though.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And there's nothing to indicate how far away they are or how close.
Yeah, no, that's one of those things that's hardwired into the lizard mm-hmm. brain.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it pierces all other sounds.
Yeah. Mark, thanks for sharing with that. We have an email from Lorraine. She says she's from Hope. She says she wants to know if different cultures think different things are scary. I guess, Rory, that's a great question for you since you have lived in different cultures and live now.
Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, where I live is very, very westernized. So, and they love horror movies there. But I'd have to say I think the scary sounds are pretty much universal because of Hollywood.
I don't know. I mean, think about like, you know, Grendel's, you know, so a lot of this is really Western cult, you know, European based. But, you know, think about like, you know, Gilgamesh. I mean, monsters have been part of human society since someone wandered off one night and was never found again.
So who decides what a monster sounds like?
I do. I can make it sound like anything I want to.
Yeah.
But so it's probably low registers.
Yeah,
right?
I just go to these dark places in my mind, and whatever comes out, that's what the monster sounds like.
Huh.
But then you can also have the you know, like Gollum. You know,
my precious.
Yes.
just because you said dark places in your mind, Rory, I for some reason thought of Alien and how the reason that's become, you know, there's so many other movies that, you know, were faded away. But the thing about Alien was the art, the artwork that sort of was defined the alien's actual look. And I think a lot of sound is like that too, where a certain sound worked really well, and that becomes like endemic, and that's like what all future things heard. Like from a radio drama analogy, there is this Tyrannosaurus Rex that was in Bradbury 13, The Distant Sound of Thunder. This is a Pink Floyd album, but Sound of Thunder. and there was this sound is like, and it was the howl of a male black Mustang in trying to get at a female mixed in with a bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to that and you listen to Jurassic Park, they're like the lineage. And it's what's kind of fun is when you start to get a little bit of literacy around things like sound, how one artist, like, you know, how one sort of thing becomes like iconic.
Well, that's what they say about Jurassic Park is Steven Spielberg created the sound of a dinosaur because nobody knew what a dinosaur sounded like before that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And using a bull elephant and a lion.
And a lion, and all kinds of
Yeah, Dirk
stuff.
Maggs did the same with American Werewolf in London when he created the werewolf itself, the growl and all that. And I actually had to do part of the growl, and then he actually doctored that, but added more textures to it.
People actually want a fun little app to manipulate their own voice. I have a program called Dehumanizer. I have it for doing the audio.
Do you drop that off at the legislative offices?
Here's my Dehumanizer. But I actually got an email from the company the other day, and they've created an app for the phones, and you can record yourself and make your own demon voices in it.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. My teenagers will love that. We have an email from Kathy. I sat on the edge of my seat throughout the first entire viewing of Fugitive. Can you describe the sound component that helped with that prolonged anxiety for the audience?
Again, it's just building tension.
Really?
Yeah. It's tension. And that's what creates the scary aspect is that there's the music and then it can be the background sounds, the ambiences, and any little creaks or groans or whatever. That's just building the tension.
Yeah, but it's a slow buildup. Because if you started off like super intense, you can only keep a super, you know, the climax can only last, you know, 10 seconds, but you have to get there.
You can't continually hit the audience over the head.
Okay, so she goes on to say one of the more scary, one of the scariest movie experiences I ever had was from Wait Until Dark, when Audrey Hepburn, creeping around in her darkened apartment after smashing all light bulbs, desperately trying to outwit the intruder, is pounced on by the assailant. Utterly terrifying, and asks, was there a sound component to that? Do you all know that movie well enough to know?
I don't.
With him stepping on the glass and again, the music would have actually been an integral part of it.
But it's the not seen. Yeah. It's what you don't see that scares you, not like what's right in front of your face.
How do sound directors, and I'm thinking with this film, Wait Until Dark, I haven't seen it, but I wonder if the concept came. I might now. You guys may make me brave to try again. But did someone think, wow, it'd be really cool to hear somebody stepping on shattered glass and let's build the script around that? Or is it almost always the other way around? Well, we have a script and you have to create the sound to match.
I mean, Bill's the director and then he'll come to me and I'll do my pass and my take on it. And then he'll come back and say, let's try this, let's try that. And then it's this very collaborative effort between the two of us.
Yeah, very symbiotic.
Yeah.
So scenes will change based on an idea that the sound engineer says. If somehow we could have the bad guy doing this, then it would be really scary.
You have your original idea, and then when it's actually realized, it's, no, but it helps you to make the leap to the next point that will actually help you to realize that what you're searching for.
Okay, so we just have a couple minutes left, and I want each of you to tell us what your favorite, and I'm going to say movie just because there's so many more movies and audio dramas, what your favorite scary movie is and why, and you know, as far as sound, if the audience wants to go stream something or rent something and listen to what you all have been talking about, what do you recommend?
Oh, well, I mean, I have to bring up Alien again. I don't even remember if there's the sound, but I'm pretty sure what's at least the first Ridley Scott version, a lot of it is about there not being anything, and it's the anticipation of like going down to this place that clearly there's something wrong here, but it takes a while for that to come to you. So I think that's what makes it scary, and I'm sure sound adds to that, though I haven't listened to it critically from a sound perspective.
I say Alien as well, because I mean, right from the very beginning, it starts off with nothing. It's just the throbbing of the engine, and it's just this derelict whatever the ship is doing, but then the scratchy sort of sound with when they're actually trying to get the telecast from what's going on in the planet, it's just it's all staticky. And I do want to jump in with one of the questions originally was what the scariest sound is. That for me, and that would be whenever Trump opens his mouth. So I thought I'd just kind of throw that in there while I have an opportunity.
And Rory?
Mine's, I'd have to say Nightmare on Elm Street. I was a kid when that came out, and I'll never forget the sound of Freddy's blades going across the metal. It's like, and then there's that nursery rhyme, like, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. And it scared the out of me, but I still had to watch them. I couldn't stop.
It's because you get hooked on that. Hooked on a feeling.
Yeah.
Oh, Rory just left a pile of on the scene. So
are there different things that scare kids and adults, or is it kind of universal?
I don't know. Look, when I watch Nightmare on Elm Street now, I'm just like, it's not that scary.
but kids are more literal. So things that as an adult, especially like my wife doesn't have a huge, she didn't get desensitized the way I had. So she can watch a film and still have a real profound emotional impact. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think when you're young, that's the formative years. And you eventually learn, no one's actually getting shredded into pieces. But, real quick, my brother loved horror movies, watched Tremors, and I remember there's this moment where we were like walking, the thing was monsters came out of the ground and grabbed you and pulled you under, and anyways, we were at playing on some rocks, and his friend was like halfway out of there, going, Tremors got me, And I ran home faster, you know, like a bolt of lightning, because you believe things literally that you can't as an adult. So maybe it's the same things that scare you, but the world is much more literal as a young person.
Six o'clock news is the scariest nowadays.
Rory, how does one, you're confronted with this, a monster is pulling someone into a hole in the ground. What is the sound of that?
Oh, for that, you're going to have dirt and grabs at the cloth and the screams.
Screen is being muffled and being filled with dirt. And then silence.
Okay.
And then silence.
Okay. Well, thank you all for being here today. I hope you all have a very happy Halloween. Frederick Greenhalgh is writer and producer at Final Rune Productions and Radio Drama Revival. He's also the creator of The Cleansed, a serialized apocalyptic epic podcast. Rory O'Shea is the award-winning sound designer of The Starling Project and owner of Smash Sound Studios. Bill Dufresne is producer of Audio Comics and the director of Titanium Rain, The Perhap Knots, and Horoscopes. And again, a reminder that Lock and Key, the audio version, the audio play these guys all worked on is, you can find, it's free until November 4th, and you can find it on the MPBN Main Calling Facebook page. I'm going to do something I don't usually do. Bill, would you read the next paragraph of my script in the shadow voice for me, starting with the name of our engineer?
John Keimel ran the board. You can find past editions of Main Calling, as well as a link to our podcasts, by visiting maincalling.net.
Executive producer of Main Calling is Jonathan Smith.
I'm Jennifer Rooks.
I'm Jennifer Rooks.
No, she is Jennifer Rooks. I'm not Jennifer Rooks. And you have been listening to Main Calling on the Main Public Broadcasting
Network.
Thank you for joining us.